dear devotees. We've been talking in this series on the significance of doing bhakti to Radha Krishna in Kaliyuga. In the last couple of speeches, about the Guru, the divine saint, and how the saint helps us to find God. Anyone who wants to attain God needs the help of a divine saint. However, finding someone who's actually qualified to be a guru is another matter. We learn from the scriptures that a true guru must be God realized. But since that's an internal state, there's no way to tell by judging someone's dress or behavior whether they're God realized. You might think, oh, surely you would be able to have some guess. For instance, if you saw someone get angry, then you could conclude they can't be a saint, because saints are supposed to be beyond anger. If you saw someone doing some kind of action that looks to be motivated by greed, you would conclude that that can't be a saint, because a saint is God realized. He must be beyond greed and anger. You would think, well, a saint must be physically renounced. A saint shouldn't be living in some kind of posh palace or something and driving a Maserati or a Mercedes-Benz. Surely a saint wouldn't live like that. If you see someone like that, you tend to cross them off your list. Surely a saint would not have a family. Why would a saint get married and have children? The saint must, in his or her heart, be completely renounced from those things. But yesterday I gave you many examples from the history, which are written in our scriptures, that defy this stereotype that we have of saints, and means that if we try to use these means to identify a saint, more often than not, we'll be wrong. I'll give you one more example from Kaliyuga, from the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji 500 years ago. A saint named Pundarika Vidyanidhi lived a very affluent lifestyle. One day, Mahaprabhuji was sitting with those devotees who were there in satsang, and he said, come on, I'm going to go and have darshan of a great saint. So why don't you all come along with me? Now keep in mind, Mahaprabhuji was the dissension of Radha and Krishna. So all the disciples say, oh, wow, Mahaprabhuji himself is going to visit this saint? This must indeed be a great saint. So they went and they saw this house they were entering into was not so much a house but a palace. With the utmost luxury, opulence, and they walk in and they see Pundarika Vidyanidhi sitting on this ornate padded seat, being fanned by young ladies. Someone else is coming and offering him food. In other words, like what you could imagine how a king would be living, more than that. So there was one devotee in the group who got a little confused seeing this, although they all knew the philosophy, but in his mind he thought, how can this be a saint? How could he be living like that if he's God realized? What interest would he have in all of these riches and everything that he's surrounded himself with? And when he saw Mahaprabhuji greet him, they embraced, and Mahaprabhuji was actually crying tears. He was so happy to meet that devotee. So this satsangi is, instead of doing satsang, now he's doing kusang. Because when you're trying to get the benefit of a saint, we'll talk about that more later, but the benefit is received based on the positive openness of our mind to that saint, or our positive thoughts create an open channel through which we can receive the divine grace of that saint. So if we're having negative thoughts, it's blocking the grace. So instead of doing satsang, we're doing kusang. Instead of getting benefit from the saint, we're harming ourselves because we're blocking our own heart from receiving the grace through doing such namaparad. So anyway, this one devotee was thinking that not only is Pundarika Vidyanidhi not a saint by my estimation, but I'm having doubts about Mahaprabhuji, because he's the one telling us that he's a great saint. So they went back anyway. Mahaprabhuji didn't say anything at that time. They went back to Mahaprabhuji's place, and meaning not his place, but where they were gathered for the satsang in the other location. All the kirtan was going on. Mahaprabhuji was sitting amongst the devotees. And that devotee who had gotten confused was thinking that, meaning he was disturbed. Everyone else was doing the chanting and meditating on Radha Krishna. And this devotee was just disturbed. He was rolling things over in his mind again and again. How can it be? And now I'm having doubts about Mahaprabhuji as well. So in the middle of all of that, Mahaprabhuji called him. Hey, come here. What's going on? So he admitted everything to him. So he said, you made a big mistake. Now the only way to rectify this, you go to Pundarika Vidyanidhi, surrender to him, admit to him your mistake, and if he forgives you, then all will be well. So he went back with another devotee to meet Pundarika Vidyanidhi. And this other devotee, as they entered, and he again saw him sitting in that same state, seemingly absorbed in these worldly indulgences. The other devotee sang that one shloka that I sung in my Vandana, Ahovakiyam. It's a shloka from the Bhagavatam that tells about one of Krishna's gunas, one of his virtues, the virtue of kindness. It's a description of that virtue of kindness, telling that Krishna is so kind that he even found a reason to grace Putana, who had come to him in order to kill him, but he found a reason to grace her and sent her to his divine abode. Who could be more kind than that? So when you have such a gracious and kind Shri Krishna to grace you, then what do you have to worry for? If he's willing to grace Putana, he's willing to grace you as well. So this is one of the divine virtues of Shri Krishna, his kindness. This virtue is encapsulated or imbued in that shloka. Actually, the actual guna is there. That's the significance of divine scriptures. They're not mere words. And especially the Bhagavatam contains the ras of Shri Krishna, divine bliss. So when that devotee sang this verse, Aho Vakiyam, Pundarika Vidyanidhi heard that, and what those devotees saw then at that time, they weren't expecting. At least Gadadhar, the one who had become confused, he wasn't expecting. The other devotee knew. Rupa Goswami had written in Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu, Stambha svedo tharo mancha swarbhedo thave pathu vaivarnyamashru pralaya ityashtau satvika smrita. That there are eight main symptoms of prem. Prem, I'll explain more in the days to come when we speak more of bhakti. But prem is the essence of the divine bliss. All forms of God give divine bliss to their devotees, and all saints experience unlimited divine bliss. But there is even the essence, the sar, bhuta tattva, of that bliss, of anand, is called prem. So that prem is hard to describe. Narad Ji, in his Narad Bhakti Darshan, says, Anirvachaniyam premasvarupam. Prem cannot be described into words, because if you translate it literally, it means love, but is nothing like the love of this world, because it's a divine power. It's the essence of the power of bliss, which is the essence of God's personal power. Now, there are some saints, not all saints, some saints who have attained that prem. It depends what level, what class of saint they are. So if someone has that reserve of prem in his heart, it's like an unlimited ocean of divine bliss. Then, according to the convention that saints follow, they try to hold that inside and generally don't reveal it very much in the world. Gopaniyam, gopaniyam, gopaniyam prayatnatah. They try to conceal it, but it can't always stay concealed. It's like, let's say you just had a very sad event in your life. And maybe because your mind is distracted from it temporarily, you're not crying anymore. And then someone comes to you and says, "Oh, I'm very sorry for your loss." Again, the tears start. So, meaning it was there inside, you had it controlled for some time, and then it overflowed again. It can be that way with love, it can be that way with pain. So in this case, the saint is trying to control that unlimited flow of divine bliss, and he succeeds much of the time. But when Pundarika Vidyanidhi heard this verse sung, and that he experienced that quality of Krishna's kindness, it overflowed and he displayed all eight of those. It's called Ashtasattvik Bhav, the eight Sattvik Bhav. Sattvik not meaning like sattva guna of maya. There's a divya sattva as well. So divine symptoms of that inner prem that he has. So those symptoms manifest physically in the body, like trembling of the body, because there's a tremendous power coursing through him. And in the thrill of that experience, he may get like Roma Harsh, it's called, Romanch. The hairs stand on end, you get goosebumps on your skin. Trembling, then he may become completely still like a statue. The color of his face may change to very, very pale. If he's singing, the tone of his voice can also change abruptly. Without him trying to, it just happens. He could start sweating profusely, just like his pores opened up and sweat is pouring out. Tears can also be pouring from his eyes, either tears of happiness for meeting Krishna or tears of longing. He's desiring so strongly to meet with Krishna. Or he may even lose consciousness. So just from singing this one shlok, they saw all of this all of a sudden manifest in his body. So then Gadadhar knew. Oh, because he knew the philosophy. So in that moment he came to his senses. Oh, I made such a big mistake. I was judging this saint by the outer things around him. I was judging him by his lifestyle. I'm so foolish. Look at what's inside of him. That's what you have to find. That's one way that you have to try to recognize a saint, is by recognizing what's inside the saint. So you saw many such examples yesterday where saints actually acted in an angry way, in a greedy way, in a desirous way, in a jealous way. And I explained to you after each of these examples that if we had actually been there and seen such behavior, we would have condemned all of them. That Ram, he's behaving in that way, like he's afraid of a thunderstorm. No, he can't be God. Krishna married 16,108 wives. Why would God do such a thing? No, he can't be God. Lakshman became suspicious of Bharat. No, how can he be a divine personality? We deny him as well. Bharat spoke to his mother that way? No, he can't be divine either. Shatrughna did that to Mantara? No, he can't be divine. We're crossing them all off. Sanakadik Paramahans became angry and cursed somebody? No, they can't be saints either. Arjun and the Pandavas, all five married one wife? No, they can't be divine. Can't be. Who would a saint do such a thing? This is how we think. Just like Gadadhar using his own intellect to try to judge Pundarika Vidyanidhi. Would a saint live in such opulent circumstances? Is it possible? No, I don't think so. According to my intellect, it cannot be. This cannot be a saint. So I gave you many, many examples. And I also told you I would show you some opposite examples today. That there are also cases of demons behaving more like saints. For instance, when Marich knew that today I'm going to go and meet Ram. He was the one who became the golden deer to lure Ram away from Sita so Ravan could abduct her. He was so happy. He's saying, today I'm going to meet the beloved of my soul. And he was thrilled to be going to meet Ram. Of course, Ram shot him with the arrow. And he died. He knew that was going to happen and he happily went. Look at Kumbhakarna. Kumbhakarna is saying to his elder brother Ravan, Purvameva maya prokto Ramo Narayana para Sita cha yoga mayeti Bodhito pina buddhyase. Adhyatma Ramayana. He says, oh brother, I've told you before, Purvameva maya proktaha, I've told you, Ramah Narayana para. Ram is Narayan. He's supreme God. Come to your senses. And Sita, she is Yogamaya Shakti. She is his Yogamaya power. Don't oppose them. Go and surrender to them. But I've explained it to you and you're not accepting, so be it. I'll go and fight against him. But look at Ravan. Look at Ravan's own words. Is he accepting who Ram is or not? He says, Smritva smritva tadevaham Ramam pashyami sarvatah Ato janihi ramam tvam param brahma sanatanam. Adhyatma Ramayan. He is exclaiming, O Ram, I see you everywhere. And you are param brahma sanatanam. Now I know. Ataha janihi. Now I know without a doubt that you are the eternal, supreme, divine God. He knows. He's exclaiming to Ram himself. So he says, Ittham vichintya khila rakshasendro Ramam viditva parameshwaram harim. He says, this is also from Adhyatma Ramayan. He says, I know who you are, Ram. I know you're God. There's no doubt in my mind. Then why is he opposing him? He says, Ittham vichintya khila rakshasendro Ramam vidit Parameshwaram Harim Virodha Buddhyaiva Harim Prayami Drutam Nabhaktya Bhagavan Prasidet. He says something very curious. He says Ram would not have been as pleased with my devotion to him as quickly if I did bhakti to him in a favorable way. By doing virodh to him, I have made him pleased with me much more quickly. Why? Think of it this way. When Ram comes, when Shri Krishna comes, They're coming to perform leelas. Leelas means divine actions. And all of those divine actions happen for a reason, and they're also pre-decided. He knows what leelas is he going to perform, so he also knows, if you think of it kind of like a play, he also knows what cast members he's going to need to perform those leelas. Like a play, you have some good guys, you have some bad guys, some villains. So when Ram comes, when Shri Krishna come, they bring many, many of their divine associates from their divine abode. So just like Ram takes avatar, Shri Krishna takes avatar, they descend on this earth planet. So along with them come many saints. Now some of those saints get to be his mother, father, brother, sister, friends, that kind of thing. Someone has to be his guru, someone has to be his teacher, but also someone has to be his enemy. Now who could be God's enemy? You think, oh, atheists are God's enemy. No. No atheist has the power to oppose God. A saint has the power to oppose God. So, if God wants to have a war, he wants to have a fighting leela, who's going to fight against him? No ordinary soul. What does it mean to be an atheist? It just means you say from your mouth, I don't believe in God. That doesn't mean you have the power to oppose God. And so a God-realized saint can fight against God. Thus, Ram would have said to some of his saints that, you are my most dear one, and I know you like to follow my agya, so you have to become my enemy. Imagine if someone said to you, if you really want to please me, then spread some false rumor about me, so that everyone will think I'm of low moral character. What would your reaction be? I don't want to do that. Why would I want to spread such a rumor? No, please, I mean it. If you really value my friendship and you want to do something nice for me, then do this. None of us would be able to do it. And Ram is telling his saints, you have to fight against me. So who would be willing to do it? Only the most dedicated of his servants would be willing to do that. So that's why he said he was more pleased with my devotion when I opposed him than if I had done straight up bhakti to him. Because I was playing my part in the leela. This is the case with all of the so-called demons in all of God's leelas, which he kills. You all know if you've read Ramayana or Bhagavatam, whenever he kills them, what happens? They go to his divine abode. Because that's where they came from. That's just the end of that leela. It's the end of their part in the leela, and they're going back. When Ravan was killed by Ram, as he was dying, what did he say? He said, you think you've won this war now because you've killed me, but really I've won. Because you're still here on this earth, and I'm going back to your divine abode ahead of you. So I win. So Ravan, Kumbhakarn, Kans, Shishupal, all these so-called demons are merely divine personalities playing a part in a leela. Some of what they're doing is to just make an interesting leela, a battle kind of leela. Some of what they're doing is giving an example of how we should not be, that we could recognize those bad qualities within ourselves, like the pride of Duryodhan that led him to run headlong into this Mahabharata war in which his whole family got destroyed. So we can recognize such pride in ourselves and let it not lead to our destruction. So something like this, different saints behave as Rakshasas in order to set some kind of example like that. That may be part of the reason behind what they're doing. And as far as the ones who are recognized as saints or divine personalities who seem to get confused or have angry behavior or that kind of thing, there's always a reason behind what they do as well. For instance, remember Parvati? She got confused seeing Ram's behavior, and she started questioning, is he really God? Is he not God? And then she went and tried to test him. So after, when at that time she was actually Sati, and then later when she came again as Parvati, and she met God Shiva again, and again she said, I still have this same confusion. Can you please help me clear it up? Shiva said to her, Tum Raghubir Charan Anuragi Kin Hihu Prashna Jagat Hit Lagi. You don't have any confusion, actually, Parvati, I know. You know the truth. You're asking so that the world may benefit. Because in order to remove her confusion, what did God Shiva do? He told her the Ramayana. And thus it became known to the whole world. In other words, if someone doesn't ask the question, how can he reveal the knowledge? If Arjun didn't behave as an agyani, an ignorant soul, which he's not, but he behaved like one, so that Krishna could answer his questions and thus reveal the knowledge of the Gita. Same thing Parvati is doing. She's feigning ignorance, number one, to show us, see what happened to me when I questioned in God's divine actions? Shiva renounced me. So you don't use your intellect to question in God's actions. Just use those leelas as a way to remember God. Don't try to analyze them intellectually, then you'll only damage yourself. When Sanakadik Paramahans cursed Jay and Vijay, this was also part of a whole leela. It was a lead up to a long string of events. Sanakadik Paramahans can never feel anger, but they can act angry. So they cursed Jay and Vijay, the gatekeepers of Vaikunth Abode, that you have to be born three successive times as demons on the earth planet. So the first time they came as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksh. This was the lead up to God coming as Varaha Avatar, the divine boar. And after that, to him coming as Nirsingh Bhagwan and doing that Leela, which also involved Prahlad. So these are important leelas that took place and are very instructive to the souls about how to do bhakti and how to live one's life. And they wouldn't have taken place if not for the behavior of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. I can't go into detail now. In other words, those demons coming was part of God's divine plan. They're not demons. They're his divine parshad, his divine associates from his abode, Vaikunth. The second time they came as Ravan and Kumbhakarn. And the third time they came as Shishupal and Dantabhaktra, who was another one of the kings of those days of Sri Krishna, who behaved as a demon. So, we see when we understand, sometimes we're made privy to these behind-the-scenes reasons. Then we can understand, to some extent, the reasons behind such seemingly confusing behavior of the saints. Now you know, Sanakadik Paramahans cursed them to simply give them a reason to come on this earth planet. Shrap is the word in Sanskrit. You know what shrap actually means? Shreya prad. Shreya means kalyan. Prad means denevala. This kind of shrap, this kind of curse, brings about some kind of event to grace the souls. That's it. That's shrap. Curse means a particular divine action which causes something good to happen to the souls. But it look humko ajeeb lagta hai na? Like we think, oh, that's so strange, a saint cursing someone. But saints don't curse ordinary people. They only curse other saints as part of divine leelas. It's an internal matter. Has nothing to do with us. Now, the point of all of this is to understand that it's a big mistake to try to judge who is a saint and who isn't by outer appearances. That's the point. That's why I told you all of these stories, so that if you ever get the chance to meet a saint, you won't make that mistake of trying to judge their divinity by their dress or their outer behavior. If you see a saint, someone you believe may be a saint, and maybe you're even getting some teachings from them, you're benefiting from their association, and you're seeing that benefit in your life, and you're feeling excited about it, that, oh yes, I'm learning so much, and I'm getting so much benefit, and then one day you see the saint speak out of anger to someone and scold someone, and you say, oh no, I was wrong. He's not a saint, and you never come back. Many people do such things because they have this firm belief. No, a saint must be beyond anger. The saint is beyond anger. It doesn't mean the saint can't act in an angry way. You can act in an angry way, can't you? If you're an actor in a play and you're supposed to act angry, you can make an angry face and yell at someone. If you can do it, you don't think God and the saints can do such acting? See, with what power do we perform our actions? With Maya. Maya is the material power. And if you think of it like you have God, you have Maya, and under Maya are all us souls. Then under the soul is the intellect and the mun, the emotional mind, and your senses and body. Now, you can think of it like the light of Maya is coming onto the soul. And the light of Maya is tricolored. Ajamekam lohit shukla krishnam vahvi praja srijamanam sarupa. Ajo hyeko jushamano nushete jahatyenam bhukta bhogam ajonya. Shvetashvatra Upanishad. Tricolored means having three qualities. Sattva, white. Raj, red. Tam, black. We already talked about these three qualities of Maya. So these three qualities fall on the soul from Maya. So everything, all of our perceptions and all of our actions are colored by these three colors of Maya. Like I explained, we may be more predominantly sattvic, more predominantly rajas, or more predominantly tamas, but definitely we're affected by these three qualities of Maya. Tribhir gunamayair bhavairebhi sarvamidam jagat mohitam nabhijanati mamebhya paramavyayam Gita. Shri Krishna says, because every soul is under Maya, or those souls who are under Maya, they're affected by these three qualities of Maya. They're mohit by them. Because since this tricolored light falls on the soul and goes on to the mind and senses, and then the senses illuminate the world around us. So it's like illuminating a white wall with a red light. What's going to happen? It's going to look red to you. Or illuminating it with a green light, it's going to look green, but it's actually white. So something like that, we project these three qualities on the whole world around us. So it means even if divine God is standing in front of us, like I said, if we could have seen Ram during that time, we would have thought, oh no, he's just an ordinary man. Why? Because we're projecting those three gunas onto everything that we perceive. It's the same reason we can't perceive God even now, even though he's omnipresent. And even if he takes avatar and he's right before us, even then we can't recognize his divinity because we're completely bound by and deceived by these three qualities of Maya. And it's with this that we perform our actions as well, with the power of Maya. So whatever limited ability we have to do things, it's according to the limited power of our intellect, limited power of our senses and body. With what power does a saint perform actions? Well, for the saint, Maya has been removed. Now the divine light of God falls straight on the soul. Maya was between the soul and God. Now Maya's removed for that soul, the God-realized saint. So the divine light falls on the soul. It has a name, Swarup Shakti, or Yoga Maya. God's personal power enters that soul. Now that soul becomes permeated by that divine Shakti. So a saint performs his actions with the power of Yoga Maya. Aghatita Ghatana Patiyasi. Yoga Maya is the power which makes all the impossibles possible. Kartum akartum anyatha kartum samartha. With Yoga Maya, the saint, see, the what yog means, keeping you in contact with your divine state. So the saint remains in that divine state internally, but is able to do mayic looking actions. Very simple explanation. Internally, he's one with God, and internally there's no question of mayic desire, anger, greed, that kind of thing. But externally, he can do mayic looking behavior. In other words, he can behave in an angry way, furrow his brow, shout at someone, get married, have kids, look like he's enjoying some worldly luxuries, indulging in worldly riches. He can do all of those things from outside, and from inside it has no effect, zero effect. It has an effect on us. That's why Shri Krishna says, Tam bhranshayami sampadbhyo yasya che chamyanugraham. Bhagavatam. If I want to grace you, I start taking away things, worldly things from you. Why? Because you become so attached to those worldly things, you get distracted and you forget about me. But there's no question of that ever happening to a saint. So it doesn't matter. He may be the richest person in the world, may be married, have many children, may be totally renounced, living in a cave somewhere. It makes no difference to that saint. Can you imagine that? No difference. Not less difference. No difference. You know why we can't imagine that? Because it would make a difference to us. So we think if it's impossible for us, it must be impossible for him. If I can't act angry without being angry, then the saint can't do it either. If it's impossible for me to get married and have kids without this kaam, without this desire for such enjoyment, then it must be impossible for a saint as well. Surely Prahlad and Dhruv must have had such desires, otherwise why would they have gotten married and have had kids? This is what we believe. Yet, it is not so. In the Bhagavatam, Parikshit asks a question of Shukdevji, who's telling him all of Krishna's leelas. So he says, when he got to the part about Shri Krishna doing Maharas with the gopis, in Maharas Leela, Shri Krishna plays his flute in the middle of the night. And all the gopis hear it and they come running and meet him in the jungle. So they leave their home, they leave their kids, their husband, they sneak out of the house, and they go and meet Krishna in the middle of the night. All the gopis go. And then Maharas happens. In Maharas, all the gopis dance and sing with Radha and Krishna. So at this point, Parikshit says, But Guruji, isn't that against dharma? Why would Krishna be doing something against dharma? It looks like a sin. Many of you, when I described it, your eyes went... Yes, would God do such a thing? So, Shukdev ji explained, dharma vyatikramo drishta ishvaranam cha sahasam tejiyasam na doshaya sarvabhujam yatha vahane sarvabhujam yatha. He says, a saint and God are like a fire. The fire is always pure, and even when something impure comes in contact with the fire doesn't become impure. It purifies the impure thing. You throw anything in a fire, it becomes fire, right? So it adopts the qualities of the fire. The fire does not adopt the quality of the thing that you're putting into it. So it means that fire can never be made impure. Similarly, God and those souls who have reached God, they may dharma vyatikramaha drishta. From your eyes it may appear that God or the saints are doing actions which are adharma. However, dharma anyatra dharma danyatra dharma kenopanishad. God is beyond dharma and adharma. Adharma and dharma are for the souls under maya. What is dharma for? Dharmo yasyam madat makah. Bhagavatam. Shri Krishna says dharma is simply how the souls come to me. That's it. So what happens after the souls reach Shri Krishna? Ved, which is the repository of this dharma, how do we know what is dharma and adharma? Ved tells us, this is prescribed, this is prohibited. That's dharma, that's adharma. So when a soul reaches God, what happens to his relationship with the Vedas? Brahmavid shruti murdhani. Ved itself says, those souls who have reached God walk putting their feet on the heads of the Richas of the Vedas. In other words, they've left behind those Vedas. When you go to university, let's say you've been studying in university for some time, and then you come back to your high school to visit your teacher. Will your teacher scold you? Hey, you're late for class. But I don't go to this school anymore. So similarly, those souls who reach God, they're not in this school anymore. This school is for us. These souls who have forgotten who we are, we've forgotten we're actually the divine soul and we belong to God. So all those rules are for us, to cure us of that forgetfulness and allow us to meet with Shri Krishna. Once that's done, what's the sense of following those rules? They have no application in a saint's life. It is also said that the Vedas are like the Purohit who get the husband and wife married. They do the 7 times around the fire, bind them together, bas, ho gaya. Now when they go to their house, whatever they do there in the house has no concern with that Purohit. His job was to bring them together. That's it. Just like that, Ved is to bring God and the souls together. After that, Ved's work is done. Ved comes back. So these do's and don'ts are for us, not for the saints. The saints are one with God. Their mind is completely free. They're kritta kritya. Veda Vyasji says, their doing is done. Why do we do? Because we desire happiness. That's the reason behind every action. Once you attain God, who is the form of happiness, what's left to do? Nothing left to do. So the saints have, there's no right or wrong in a saint's case, because right or wrong is according to the motivation. What's the motivation for a saint's actions? Well, it would seem that the saint shouldn't have any motivation for any action because he's already attained perfect happiness, so why would he do anything? Then why is the saint performing any action at all? Shri Krishna says, Main batata hun. Acharyam mam vijaniyat. Nava manyeta karhichit. Namartya buddhya suyeta. Sarvadeva mayo guru. Bhagavatam. He says, I am inside that saint. And because I want to use this saint to grace the souls, whatever I want the saint to do, the saint is going to do. That's it. Because his doing is done. What more does he have to do? He has nothing more to attain for himself. So now I'm using this saint for whatever I need to grace the souls in whatever way, to perform whatever actions are required. I'm now governing the actions of that saint, because the saint has nothing, no reason to do anything. So for all of these reasons, we understand that a saint's outer behavior, on one hand, it's not bound by the same rules that our behavior is bound by. Not the saint and not God will ever receive the consequences of the actions they perform. Again, karma is only for those saints, those souls under Maya. Once you're beyond Maya, the law of karma doesn't apply, because karma is according to your motivation. Good motivation, you're rewarded. Bad motivation, you're punished. Now the saint has no motivation left. He has no attachment anywhere in this world. He's only attached to God, so there's no binding effect for any of his actions. Even a soul who can perform an action without attachment is not bound by the effect of that action. What to say of a God-realized saint? So the saints are not bound by the same rules we are. They're not bound to receive the consequences of their actions. And they have no reason, no selfish reason to perform any action. Just like God has no selfish reason to perform any action. So we can understand that whatever God is doing and whatever the saints are doing is only to grace the souls. We may not understand, how is it gracing us? Why did God do this? How is that going to help us? How would we be able to understand everything? God's intellect is divine and unlimited. His planning is not always going to make sense to us. So we have to have that much faith. But a question still comes, that in the Gita it says, Yadyada charati shreshthas tatta devo jano janah. Yadyada charati shreshthas tatta devetaro janah. Sayat pramanam kuruto lokas tadanu vartate. That people tend to imitate the actions of great individuals. So if the saints are doing such actions which appear to defy the laws of dharma and karma, in other words, they're doing what appear to be wrong actions, like Shri Krishna doing ras in the middle of the night with the gopis, or like any saint getting angry or doing something out of greed or lust or all these things that it appears to us that they're doing, if they're doing such things, then aren't the ordinary souls like us going to imitate their actions? And then what's going to happen to the world if everybody imitates those seemingly adharmic actions of the saints and God? So the answer to this question will be broached tomorrow. Bolie Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki.